up on you?
How are we going to restore 15 to 20 million jobs? I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We are national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio. For those of you that are on the airwaves listening on the radio, I encourage you to go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in here at 860 AM radio, which is available in Philadelphia in the tri-state area. If you are on the internet or have family and friends on the internet, tell them to go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live Now link. We'll be here until 12 noon. And I would like to say we're going to welcome a few callers today. I ask that you jot down this telephone number. It's 215-922-5300. That's 215-922-5300 if you'd like to join our discussion. Today I'm here with one of our very distinguished members of the panel, Joseph Evangelist, who is our consumer advocate, who is very well read and a man of many opinions, not like myself. I'm a more quiet person, I guess you'd say. But everywhere I go, people are talking about the importance of what we're doing here on American Workers Radio. And I really appreciate people spreading the word, giving out my American Workers Need You flyers, and of course, printing them off the internet site. It's really good to see that people are out there. And our quest is, we want our country back. We want our country back. We'd like to have it the way it was 25, 35. I'm sure there are people listening that can say they enjoyed it the way it was 45 years ago. America's leaders really have to sit down and talk. What are we going to do to get America to the stability that it should be? And the reason I'm saying that is we've been talking for months about Americans waking up and taking a good look at everything around them, the jobs that are available, the empty manufacturing facilities, riding down roads that can't be repaired. They're all broken up because the government doesn't have any money in there. Coffers, because they're giving money into 1,001 unnecessary programs if we had jobs here. Now, I just would like to say also that before the New World economy expanded and outsourcing became really the thing to do, America's graduates were able to find jobs prior to or shortly after graduation. Now, working in social services, a lot of people call our agency, contact me and say, Michael, do you have any jobs available? Do you have any leads? Do you have any places that we would be able to send our son or daughter, or I'll have my son or daughter come and meet with you? And unfortunately, that's not too easy to come by these days. 15 years ago, 20 years ago, as I said, people that were graduating had a place to already hang their hat. Maybe they had a few weeks off after graduation, but they went back to some place and they had the availability of employment. Some Americans are to the point of putting blame on government leaders, not looking out for the people, while others are blaming the new free market economy that's controlling our lives and our livelihoods and took away our job skills and all that. But I really think that a lot of the blame has to be put on the American people because they didn't stop, they didn't look what's happening to them, they didn't listen, and they really didn't assess what was going on as they were riding down the road of a declining economy. Yes, our national leaders are to blame because no national leader should be sitting around saying, well, we'll just let it continue as it is. Sooner or later, the tax base will dry up. if you don't keep renewing it. It's just like having a flower bed in front of your house. If you don't give it some water, the flowers are all going to die. And that's what's happening to America's economy. It's in a decline because for 30 years, we didn't water it. We didn't cultivate it appropriately. And now we have what we have. So I'm going to be speaking with Joe Evangelist today, and I'll welcome a few calls. And I know that many people send me emails. You can also contact me by going to michael@americanworkersradio.com. But do call around to family members and friends and invite them to tune in anytime by going to americanworkersradio.com. Well, I'd like to mention that as of June 2012, America's population is over 313 million. And if you look at the debt clock, which is located on the front page of American Workers Radio, you'll see that right now there are 142 million Americans employed. That means that 45.5% of our population is employed. There's additionally 24 million people listed as needing a job immediately, plus millions and millions more that are seeking part-time jobs. When you add the hundreds of thousands of new graduates coming into the system in the next 2 weeks, you will see that the amount of jobs needed is staggering. Now, with a population of 313 million, America's industry should be able to support at least 60% of the people looking for full-time and part-time jobs. We had 60% employment for a number of years. Now we're down to 45.5%. Now that's due to outsourcing. However, we have got to put outsourcing behind us and restore our industries here in the USA. Get our skills back. I know that automation has, you know, redone the entire way of manufacturing things, but when you walk into a store and you have 60 to 90% of the products foreign made, you know that something is not correct in the USA. So just one other point I want to mention is that if we had 313 million people in the country, and we need to have at least 60% of them employed, that means we need a total of 187 million people available for either full or part-time jobs. Unfortunately, we only have 142 million jobs occupied at this time. That means people getting a W-2 form at the end of the year. That means we need 45 million more jobs when you put it all together. How are we going to do this so we can stop borrowing 40 cents on a dollar to operate general government services, pay all of the entitlements? I'm not concerned about youth entitlements or entitlements to the elderly. I am discouraged that we have so many able-bodied people that should be working, could be working, but are not able to be employed because we don't have enough jobs. Joseph, what would you do after you heard those few remarks that I just made?
Well, technically, I actually argue that your statistics are misleading. Although the numbers are correct according to the Department of Labor and the Census Bureau, I think we need to recognize that the American citizens have gotten exactly what they've asked for and exactly what should be expected based on how they've managed their lives. The fact is they never expected the results. With automation and that type of area, we do see less jobs. Let's take China, for example, right now, because they're encountering what we encountered over the last 20 years. So in the last 15 years, China has seen a mass influx of people from the agriculture sector. People, we say they came from the rice paddies and they moved into the industrial area. And they went to work for companies like Foxconn, which is the big manufacturer of Apple products and other equipment, computer equipment. And, you know, Foxconn's been in the news because they're complaining about the wages, they're complaining about the suicides that happen, the work environment, etc. But here's the catch is, when they ran out of an influx of people coming out of the agricultural sector, they saw wage pressure. So Foxconn, as an example, is one company. They see wages rising. They see international critique of their business practices, how people work, the work environment, etc. So Foxconn's solution is automation. They're going to invest billions of dollars
in robots.
In robots, and they're going to eliminate the workers.
Mm-hmm.
So China's going to come on the unemployment. And you say, well, that's just part of it. Well, this is the problem that we have in the United States, is after the war, or during the war, we saw lots of housewives move into the manufacturing and industrial sector and services sector in order to take up the slack for all the men that went to war. This is in World War II. And when they came back, you know, things went back to normal. Women still were in the workforce, but a lot of them went home to be single family homemakers. You know, you had one worker, one homemaker who took care of the kids. And over the years, you know, that was the piece. And that's the push that the Republicans are making. The Republicans, when you say we want to go back to America as it is, the Republicans and the conservatives want to go back to that single family unit where you have a single worker caring for a family. And there's an advantage to that situation. The advantage to that situation is you don't have two workers. If you have a marital unit with one worker and one person staying at home, taking care of the children, etc., you need one worker to power a household. On the other side, what you have today is you have high divorce rate, lots of single parents. You have the gentleman down in Tennessee who has 30 kids by 11 women. You know, you have these type of people. And in his case, let's use Desmond's case, is there are 12 households being run for this one guy. He's got 11 women, their children, and his household. Now, in the case of this is all 12 of them need a job because they each run a household. Everybody running a household needs at least one wage earner. There's 12 jobs there. So on this cultural side, you need a lot of jobs in order to do that. If when you had the single family unit, you needed one job to run a household. In this case, you need 12 jobs to run Desmond's household because his household is split into 12 different locations. So what you look at is culturally, we're creating the need for more jobs. So what we see is we see an influx of the number of people who need jobs. All the single parents need a job. All the children coming out of these relationships need a job. So we have a growth in the number of workers. With automation, we have a decrease in mm-hmm. the number of people who are needed to do stuff. So for years, we've been pushing these people into the service sector. And we created all these retail jobs and et cetera. But the whole problem is it's all based on consumption.
Right.
So the catch that you have is as soon as somebody stops consumption.
And that is exactly where this recession.
Well, actually, the problem right now is that 50% of the spending comes from the top 10% of the population. So the 1% that everybody complains about are driving 50% of our economy on these service type pieces. The worst thing that will happen is if the people who are well off freeze their spending mm-hmm. because they will grind everything below them into there won't be any needed jobs. And that's where you have a problem with this economy is as we keep trying to help the unemployed and we focus on that. What you're seeing is the people who we want to be spending, who spend lots of the money, are holding back.
Well, there's also another part of what you're saying, and I understand your point, and this is the point of everyone that I speak with. They say, Michael, we are spending too much time and effort on programs that bring us very little benefit. We should be spending more of our time cultivating jobs, working with companies to expand employment opportunities. Instead, our elected officials are in Harrisburg, are in Washington, and in municipalities all over the country, concerned about these programs that are taking funds and giving them to people that could and should be employed. That is where the first part of what has to be done is needs to be put on the table. We have to put all this back on the table. And you mentioned about the person with the 30 children. Well, I'm sorry to say, after the first child, he should have been stopped. And he should have been made to pay for those children. I have kids, you have kids, Henry has kids, everybody has kids. We don't have anybody supporting us. It's impossible for us to believe the mentality that has been going on in this country. Can we change what we have? Yes, we can. But it's going to take a lot of people getting together and saying no more. I was really surprised with what happened in the election there, the recall yesterday. And when we come back, I want to talk about that. We'll be back in a few minutes. Call around, invite family members and friends to tune in here at 860 AM radio or on the internet from Polish AmericanRadioProgram.com or AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Dr. Eva Machak has two dental offices in Philadelphia to serve you. One at 3084 Armingo Avenue in Port Richmond, another at 4250 Richmond Street in the Bridesburg section. Dr. Eva Machak will provide you with quality dental care at affordable prices. For more information or an appointment, call Dr. Eva Machak at area code 215-739-2787. That's 215-739-2787. Dr. Machak speaks both English and Polish.
The Polish National Alliance, America's largest ethnic fraternal life insurance and investment organization, encourages you to open a PNA annuity. Your deposits are tax deferred. You can open the account with $500 and then make future deposits in any amount in your tax deferred annuity. For more information about PNA annuities, IRAs, and life insurance programs, call the Polish National Alliance at their toll-free number 1-800-621-3723. That's 1-800-621-3723. And complete details will be sent to you from the national office. When you call, you can also request that a local PNA representative contact you directly with further details about PNA annuities, IRAs, and their many insurance programs. Call the Polish National Alliance at 1-800-621-3723. That's 1-800-621-3723. Yolanda Konopacka de Scipio, attorney at law, is available to handle your legal matters. She's part of the well-known firm Bennett, Bricklin, and Salzburg and works in all areas of the law, including immigration, personal injury, compensation, and real estate. Yolanda Konopacka de Scipio is fluent in both English and Polish and welcomes clients to contact her from throughout the Philadelphia area and New Jersey. If you need legal assistance, call Yolanda Konopacka de Scipio at area code 215-423-4824. That's area code 215-423-4824.
Well, we're back here for another edition of American Workers Radio. I want to thank all of you that have been spreading the word about our broadcast and those of you that email me to let me know your opinions. I'm very pleased that we get a great response from our commentaries, which I place on our Saturday program, as well as it's on about 20 radio stations now. And I'd like to send out a shout out to the different broadcasters that place the commentaries on their particular public service time. I really appreciate them doing that. I'm back here again with Joseph Evangelist, our consumer advocate, and he's going to make some commentary about what happened yesterday in Wisconsin.
Well, Wisconsin ended up being billed at the national level of almost a union labor versus the populist type piece. And I mean, it really was a divisive way of handling things. But I think it was a learning experience for a lot of Americans. And there's two things. Is the what unions represent today is different, in my opinion, than what unions were created for, particularly with the public unions. Is what you have to recognize about the unions, and this is because Wisconsin was the birthplace of a lot of the unions, so it's historical that it's actually the place where they're fighting it out. Yes, Wisconsin was steeped. It was one of the first government public unions in the country. It may have been the first public union.
And how long ago was that?
I think it was in the 1930s. So the catch that you have right now is what you have to realize is for years, the unions gave up salary increases in exchange for huge benefits, pensions. Like Pennsylvania Department of Education, if you came in 20 years ago, you could work 30 years and then retire for life with 100% of your salary.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of New Jersey, you have people who are public unions who are collecting 2 and 3 pensions. So these unions, it was you gave up money now, you got lots of money now later, or you got better health care, etc. And unfortunately, you know, it was a method of kicking the can down the road for the politicians. You'd make some promise today that you'll get it 20 years from now, and the politician would be out of the politics by then, and he'd be off to whatever he was going to do,
and somebody else would be left holding the bag.
So, but the problem the problem that you have in places like Wisconsin is the taxpayer can't do this. Now, in the local area, we have Neshaminy School District, which is, I
was discussing some of this just the other day. I was in Harrisburg, and we were talking about this. I mean, they want all this money. They want all these considerations. They don't want to pay toward anything. I understood that 10 years ago, they were 153 out of the 500 Pennsylvania school districts. Today, they're up around 250, which means their scholastics level went down, and yet they want more money. But the most unbelievable thing is, in this economy, they're making these unbelievable demands. And that's what scares companies from opening here in the USA. As I go around, people say the same thing. Just take a look at what's happening with a lot of these demands, and you'll understand why companies hesitate opening in the USA.
It's actually even worse than that, because here's the catch, whether it's public or private unions, particularly in public unions, is because it affects taxes. One of the big arguments for this country.
Well, the union, I don't understand. First of all, let me just say this. I don't even understand why we need a public union. These people are operating on money from the taxpayers. It's not that they're earning money through manufacturing or whatever, or some services. They are taking money from the taxpayer to teach the children. And that's the thing in Neshaminy. They're demanding this. Where does that money come from?
Well,
not from the sky.
But here's what you have to recognize. And this is an example that's happening in Philadelphia with the school closures, etc. And the teachers are all upset that they're closing 40 schools and they're letting go of a lot of people. The union is its own worst enemy in some cases. Is this country was founded on taxation without representation. Now, taxation with representation isn't much better with the politicians that we have, but at least you have a say. But here's the catch. The assumption is that the city council or whoever's running the district in the budget, whether it's the governor's office, etc., is going to be able to control the budget. But here's where the problem comes in with the way that the unions work is the unions come in and say, we need 5% raises each year for the next 4 years. So hold on. So they come in. Well, here's the catch is that union contract immediately increases the city's cost. And that increase takes money out of other programs, whether it's the welfare, the homeless, the fatherhood initiative, the stuff that's supported by the mayor's office of community service. So what happens is, the union contract comes in and we get a new increase. And then the city comes in and says, well, we're short now that we have a new union contract. We need to raise real estate taxes. We need to raise business taxes. We need to raise this. So the fact is the union contract negotiation that doesn't go through city council is indirectly a forced tax increase. So it's taxation right. without representation. So somebody in the mayor's office negotiates with the union. They come up and we have a new contract, and boom. Now the city's short money again. But on the other side is, you have to realize is, in exchange for being the union members or whatever, the unions have a monopoly on the services that they have. Neshaminy cannot hire new teachers without going through the union. When SEPTA goes on strike, when the garbage collector goes on strike, there is no one else to compete with them. Mm-hmm. So the fact is when the union walks off the job in Neshaminy, the kids have to go to school till the 29th of the month. The parents now have to adjust all their schedules because the school date is moving because these teachers are walking off the job. So the end of the school year keeps getting pushed back and back and back. But the problem is the union, through its monopoly that's been given, has the ability to do two things. It has the ability to be disruptive when it doesn't get what it wants, and it has the ability to indirectly increase everyone's taxes through their own raises. Now, in Wisconsin, what you see is they're trying to stop this piece. The Obama administration with the SEIU in California is they're saying states can't avoid the union. Is if you want to drop union jobs, the federal government, the National Labor Relations Board is going to force you to use the union workers, which basically to me means that the federal government is going to mandate that in order for their supporters, which is a small percentage of the population, to be supported and taken care of by the government, that they're going to force everyone else to pay for it. Because I don't see the federal government saying, you know, we're going to cut Congress's salary in order to pay for the shortfall that the SEIU contract in California does. They're not coming in and doing that. They're just saying, make sure that you have a contract with the union. And this is where people like Scott Walker come in and they say, you know, we're going to try and break this piece. The fact is if you're given a monopoly in a city on a service, you shouldn't be allowed to strike. Police, firemen, garbage collectors, transit workers.
Absolutely.
If you're granted a monopoly, you should not be able to walk off the job. And that's the problem is we want the ability to be disruptive. We want the ability to coerce people into giving us what I want. But once somebody at the mayor's office gives in to what they want, everybody else has to pay, whether or not they do it.
You see, what you're discussing is what's happening across the USA. People, we're in Philadelphia, so we see what's happening in Philadelphia, Delaware County, Bucks County, Montgomery County, but this is happening all over the USA. School boards are ruling, making demands that we simply can no longer pay. What's also happening is, as the school boards or whatever, the trash collectors or the government workers make demands, they have to put a tax on the businesses, which is hurting the businesses from expanding. They're screaming constantly that the businesses are undertaxed, which is totally foolish. Any businessman will tell you that's absolutely out of the ballpark when you consider it. But the main problem is this. In the schools, they should have to justify any and every dollar that they receive. Now, I did ask 3 weeks ago when budget hearings were held and they said they needed a lot of money. None of the school districts in the surrounding areas presented anything that would tell me that they deserve more money. Any statistic. Just let me finish with this. If you are doing such an unbelievable job, your students are graduating near top 75 percentile of the class and above, then you can go to the school district and say, look at what a great job we're doing. We should be given some level of raise. But to have all these automatic raises and all, This is what's discouraging businesses from coming into all areas of the country because of these demands. And as a result of no businesses coming in, less and less jobs. As I mentioned in the beginning of the program, we need really, when you put everything together, the full and part-time jobs, we need 45 million jobs in the USA. If the businesses continue to be taxed to death, and all of this attitude continues, and the threat that this union or this association or whatever is going to be disruptive, we're not going to get those jobs back. So maybe what happened yesterday in Wisconsin is a wake-up call and maybe an area that's going to have to be reviewed by all school districts, all unions across the country, all associations, and even our healthcare. When I go around, many of the employers say to me, I'm not taking on any more employees because I'm afraid what this new healthcare bill is going to do to me. I don't know. It's a cat in a bag. I don't understand what it's all about. So before we can get jobs back, we have to put a lot of the stuff on the table. We'll be back in a few minutes. As I say so often, stay tuned. And if you'd like to call in, you can give us a call at 215-922-5300. The next portion of our broadcast today is being presented by the Polish Eagle Sports Club at 3157 East Thompson Street in Port Richmond, Philadelphia. For your weddings and special events, call the Polish Eagle Sports Club at 215-423-0800. And by Steam My Carpets, which serves commercial and residential properties in the Philadelphia area. Contact Jay Gryczynski at 1-877-778-3263 or visit steammycarpets.com. The law firm of Dominik Rostowski is located on the 30th floor of 1818 Market Street in Philadelphia. Whatever your legal needs are, contact the Rostowski Law Firm at area code 215-913-6090. That's 215-913-6090. You can also visit the law firm of Dominik Rostowski on the internet at rostowski.com. Dominik Rostowski, attorney at law, is available to assist you in the English and Polish language.
The office of Dr. Wojciech Zinn and Everest Dental, located at 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia, provides quality service at affordable prices. For a full range of dental services, from general care to implants, veneers, and many other procedures, contact Everest Dental for an appointment at area code 215-671-0188. From the moment you enter the office of Dr. Wojciech Zinn of Everest Dental, you will witness the latest technology in all areas of dental services. The Everest Dental offices accept all major insurances. Dr. Zinn speaks English and Polish and welcomes you to call Everest Dental, 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia, at area code 215-671-0188. That's area code 215-671-0188.
We're back here again for another edition of American Workers Radio. And Joe wanted to have some additional comments on what we were talking about.
Well, one of the things that I would like to point out is I think the stimulus package caused a lot of these problems that we have with the school district and some and a lot of the public unions and all that is causing this backlash. And I mean, I don't think the Democratic Congress and everything, when they started to push the stimulus bill when Obama came in, actually looked at this. I mean, they may have had the intent of getting people dependent on government services. I mean, if you think about it, you always say is, you know, in the drug industry, and they say, you know, the first fix is free because we just want them to keep coming back.
Right.
And, you know, the fact is I think the stimulus ended up being that, because here's what happened is through the stimulus package and all of the unfunded mandates, whether it was for, you know, transit or schools, etc., Congress coughed up lots of money for 2 years. And instead of taking the money and investing it in capital infrastructure, installing stuff for the schools, bringing in new internet, new computers, etc., it went to the union contracts. So basically what happened in a lot of these cases is we took the money from the federal government and we gave employees raises, which is great, except that the first year we have $500 million in raises, and the federal government sends us our $500 million and we implement what we need to do. Year two, we still have the $500 million that we have in salaries to pay. The federal government sends a check. We distribute it out to all the little workers and everybody's happy. Year three comes and we have the same salary amount, and Uncle Sam says there's no money in the wallet.
Yeah.
And
stimulus is over.
And here you go, and you come into Philadelphia and they say, we're $290 million short. Well, here's the problem is in a normal business, everybody would take a pay cut or you start canning people. In the city of Philadelphia, you can't really cut the pay because you're under a union contract. So you start to pare back what you're going to be able to do, which is what I think the school district of Philadelphia is doing. Here's the problem that I see with the union contract is with the seniority clauses. Normally what you do is you say, in a business, you cut the people at the top. So the guy who gets $20 million, he gets cut in half and you save $10 million. In a union shop, you start with the least senior people, they get cut. So what the school district is cutting is they're not cutting the $90,000 a year teacher. They're cutting the $10 an hour aide.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem is you need to cut lots of aides in order to make up for one teacher.
Right.
Now, if they could selectively go through and pick out the people, or in New York where they have the people who sit for 3 years in what they call the rubber room while they're going through their investigations, you know, if you can cut them and say, okay, they're off the payroll, then you can pick at the top. But the problem that we have here is when you try and cut from the bottom, the only thing that you're going to do is you're going to cut enough staff that you won't be able to man everything. Then you start closing down schools.
Well, the thing that is, there's no justification of what the budget's all about. I haven't been able to get one. I asked in Delaware County. I couldn't find anything. Montgomery County can't get anything. I looked for City of Philadelphia. It's that we need this big amount of money, but to justify penny to penny where it's going, it's not there. I heard from even people in Trenton, they said the same thing. Although they said that many of their prices are staying very level for all their services, nobody is getting any more raises. Everybody is accepting the economy for what it is. And that's not happening in some of our urban areas where they use the threat. Oh, they're going to take this and that from the children. It's insanity. I would rather see more of those people justify what is needed so that we can bring down the taxes to the people and bring down the taxes to the businesses so that businesses will grow without the fear of overtaxation from any municipality, be it Philadelphia or whatever. I don't like the fact that threat is constantly over your head, that you're going to be taxed, you have to give up the money, they're reassessing the properties. This is insanity. This is not a business-friendly climate.
Well, it's not
whether
even...
it's here in South Carolina and Florida, California, we have got to cut all this nonsense. We want our country back. What happened in Wisconsin is one way we can do it. A few weeks ago, I mentioned a referendum, and everyone said, every referendum will fail. Well, one referendum did not fail, and that was yesterday, and it happened in Wisconsin. And with that referendum, I would like to see other referendums put on the ballots. Do we need all these increases? Let's look at the exact number of students that we have in a particular school district and add it up as to what each of those children are costing us. We have to start looking at that. And I'm saying that mainly because we have to cut the taxes to the businesses we're trying to attract, or we'll never reach the 45 million jobs that we need to get back to a level of normalcy, not only in Philadelphia or any other place.
Well, I think the bigger issue with a lot of this is where they're actually running these things. I mean, the issue that I have with the school district is, I mean, I've dealt with some very good teachers, and I've dealt with some teachers that I have no idea why they're there and what they're doing. But the catch is the school district is stepping into lots of things that it shouldn't be in. For example, is there's 30 languages spoken in the school that my son goes to, and they believe that you need to be able to talk to everybody in that because the immigrant who came in who speaks no English has the right to a public education and should get dropped right into a public school. Well, the issue is that's a burden that shouldn't be in there. They should go to some special center.
ESL is the first thing.
Well, see, the ESL only really handles Spanish speaking. When you have the
No. It should go to whatever language, but it should be an intensive program where you learn the language. I mean, most of the immigrants that I know are well-versed in the English language because they took the time and the effort to do that because they wanted to be quality Americans. By spoon-feeding this idea that everybody has to have it in their language and all, no, this is America. I believe in English first. I believe in maintaining all of the other languages, absolutely. But that should really be done at the expense and because of concern of the community to keep their language alive. The parents should take some time to learn the English language and participate in the American way. When I go places and people say, oh, you're against this. No, I'm not. I'm for progress. I'm for everyone being independent. I'm for people being self-sufficient. And when I was in Harrisburg, I made that very clear the other day. I don't like the idea that we have spoon-fed people for so many years. Now those people, just as they say, teach a person to fish and they'll be independent. Give them fish and you'll just be giving them fish forever and ever.
Well, actually, I think there's a better analogy of than teaching them is the analogy that we have right now with a lot of our immigration policies, as well as our entitlement policies, is, you know, we give everybody a pair of chickens. And there's some people who take the chickens and they let them lay eggs and then they raise the poultry and whatever else. But a vast majority of what we've taught our people to do is we give them the chickens, they go home, they kill the chickens, they eat them, and they come back the next day and say, I need two more chickens. And the fact is, you know, a little planning here would have helped a lot, you know. But the problem is, so we come back the next day and it's like, well, we need two more chickens. And, you know, the fact is
I agree.
So what happens is we give them two more chickens. Well, guess what? Everybody's realized that now we don't have to cultivate the stuff. We don't have to try and raise the chickens. We'll just go back tomorrow and get somebody to give you two more chickens. Now, where are we going to get them from? We're going to get them from the people who actually, in the first place, started raising chickens instead of eating their chickens. So now we're going to take that. So at a microcosm standpoint of just looking at this little chicken scenario, you know, the fact is the worst case scenario is you're going to run out of eggs and everybody starves.
Right.
Because you're going to have one guy who is smart enough to do this. And the choice is, you know, he's either going to become the chicken magnet where he's going to charge everybody for it, or, you know, they're going to overrun and there's going to be the chickens will go extinct in wherever this little colony is and nobody will be able to eat. The fact is we don't take the step back and say, listen, we can't push all of our resources in here. We want to offer every service in every school because we want local schools. The fact is we should do what the Catholic Church had done. You had a mission, a specific language mission. If you want to be taught in Portuguese, you're going to be in the mission down here and you're going to have to get your kid there. The fact is we can't offer Portuguese services in every area.
Right.
I mean, the problem that the school district has at times is they can't locate a person who actually speaks the dialect of the immigrant.
Right.
And the fact is there's the immigrants say, well, it's a service provided by the taxpayer. Find someone. And they go out and they hire some specialist to do this. The fact is they should have a specialist for it. But everybody who needs that specialist should go to the specialist, not keep moving the specialist around and say, well, now that he's traveling 6 hours a day and doing 2 hours of work, we now need four of these specialists.
Yeah, we've taken the responsibility that we have to do everything for people rather than have people try to help themselves. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for spreading the word. I'm Michael Blihash. I'm here with Joseph Evangelist. And we'll be back very shortly. The Polish Roman Catholic Union of America, known as the PRCUA, established in 1873, is the oldest Polish-American life insurance organization in the United States. They offer outstanding life insurance plans for men, women, and children from $5,000 all the way up to $1 million of coverage per person. The PRCUA is a national fraternal organization, so people can secure life insurance plans and annuities from anywhere in the USA. Their main office is in Chicago, and their satellite office is in Port Richmond, Philadelphia, at 2636 East Allegheny Avenue. The Philadelphia office is open Monday through Friday between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., and if you're not available during those times, representatives will meet with you in the evening or during the weekend. For more information, call the PRCUA Philadelphia office at area code 215-425-3807. That's 215-425-3807. Polka Deli is located at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia, and they feature Polish-style meats and deli products and a selection of imported products from Poland and Polish-American products. Stop by Polka Deli, 2719 East Allegheny Avenue, and see the great selection of products they offer. For more information, call Polka Deli at area code 215-634-3750. That's 215-634-3750. 3750. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, has two offices in Philadelphia, one at 17th and JFK Boulevard in Center City, and the other at 8510 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. Call attorney Michael Steinman's office at 215-564-1866. That's 215-564-1866. Or in the evening or weekends at area code 215-322-0235. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, always available to assist you in the English or Polish language. Welcome back to another edition of American Workers Radio. Over the last few months, we have certainly done our very best to encourage people to support our local businesses through Small Business Weekend. And I thank our business sponsors for assisting us to make this broadcast possible. And I also want to thank the local stores that have been promoting National Small Business Weekend, as you know, the first Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of every month. Nationally, there was a Small Business Week, but that received some publicity, but could use a lot more publicity. And of course, our idea will, I'm sure, do a lot better as time goes on as people get used to going into the small businesses in their community, as I've been promoting for so long, without us helping our local businesses, many of them are going to dry up and go away, which is also going to be hurting our local economies and local employment base. One of the things that in my travels that people tell me is, Michael, you don't understand that we need more skilled workers. And I do understand that. And part of that is due to the fact that we don't have those jobs here in the USA. A man contacted me from a furniture company again, and he said to me, we are thinking of expanding some of our woodworkers, but we don't have many of them available. We have tried. We went to Monster. We went to all these other work sites. Applications were put in, but people really don't have the skills. At one time, 20 years ago, if you advertised, you would have 5 or 6 candidates for each position, because they were either looking for a better job, closer to home, little more money, different benefits. Today, you have no one. You have people coming in the door saying, if you're willing to train me, I will come and work for you. And that's unfortunate. That's another sign of how little manufacturing we're doing here, that we don't have enough skilled people to put into these jobs.
Well, it's actually worse than that, in my opinion. I sit on a committee, an OAC committee for the Department of Education for one of the schools here, and I wrote a letter to the Pennsylvania Department of Education. From a vocational standpoint, we've cut back heavily on vocational training, but the state of Pennsylvania Department of Education actually picks what's going to be offered. So, you know, you have automotive technologies, you have HVAC. Well, one of them that was slated to be potentially eliminated was web design and the computer class. And the issue was, is the Department of Education felt that that was not something that would bring employment into the state of Pennsylvania. So they were going to slowly unfund it because it's not needed in the state. And I'm thinking, you know, we're no longer creating manufacturing. I mean, we're training huge amounts of people for public safety, practical landscaping, but we're not training, you know, we train at HVAC, technology, welders, you know, cosmetology is a big one. But when you look at it, they're not training manufacturing. I mean, other than people who are welders and fabrication side for automotive, is they're not looking at training for that. I mean, the soft technologies or the things that are high paying jobs are there. When you look at it, is, you know, bringing out people and training landscapers coming out of a vocational school, or training cosmetologists or dental assistants, you know, that's nice, but it's not where we really need jobs.
That's right.
I mean, but the problem is the higher ones or the more technical ones are like, well, they'll have to get that in college. But the fact is, most of these kids can't cut it in college because they have to take an extra year in order to do the prep work to even start the college work. So, I mean, I think the issue is the Department of Education needs to press forward on what they're going to offer, allow students to move in, and allow them the flexibility to pick into these different arenas and actually push. And if there's a demand, then they should do it. What the federal government is doing, they're saying, well, we'll partner and we'll help the company actually train the employees on site. Well, the fact is we should be targeting an industry that we want to bring back and actually start the education process without saying, you know, we're going to bring in employees, you're going to hire an employee and we'll train them after the fact. They should be trained beforehand.
I agree. But we have to do one thing. We have got to support one another, stop pointing the finger of blame, because it's really not worth our time and our efforts. We have to work together to expand America's industries. That's the most important idea that we can have, because what was once made in America, there's no reason that it cannot be made in America again. That has to be where the main focus is, because for our elected officials to be sitting around finding ways to tax us is wasting our time and our effort. They should be finding ways to work with industries so that they will restore jobs in the USA, so that those industries will feel comfortable, that they'll be able to make a profit. Everything is surrounding profit. If you can't just operate a business and there's no profit involved, you must do something positive and be rewarded with a profit for it. And that is something where we've lost our way in America. We have had too many people looking for something for free, not needing to produce, and that has to be changed around. So in my final minutes here on 860 AM radio and on the worldwide internet, I'm going to ask all of you to go out of your way to look for, ask for, and buy as many American-made products as you can find. We have so many good people that are looking for jobs. As I mentioned early on, we have 142 million people in the USA employed. We need a total of 187 million jobs to really be at the 60% employment level. If we can get there working together, we have done more than any person would imagine. But it's going to take the individual people going out of their way, speaking up. When you call a company, ask them what they have that's made in America. When you walk in the store, ask them what they have. Now, am I saying that we want everything made in America? Absolutely not. We want 50% of everything that's on the store shelf with an American-made item. Can you imagine how many jobs would be able to be restored if you walked into a store and at least 50% of the products were made in the USA? It's hard to believe. America's clothing industry needs 14 million jobs restored. Just 14 million jobs right in the clothing industry. When you look at all of the other industries that could be restored, including electronics and home devices needed, you're talking about the 24 million that we need. And then from that 24 million, you will get many more million part-time jobs, the help jobs, the part-time helpers, substitutes, not just looking to be looking for something for free in the system, but looking to be a positive part of America's economy. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to close off today and ask you to spread the word about our broadcast here on AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You can also access us from many sites, BuyAmericanMadeCampaign.com, AmericanWorkersNeedYou.com. You can even go to ConsumerAdvocateRadio.com or Radio5000.com. And you can also access us from NationalSmallBusinessWeekend.com. We had a lot of good discussion today. We're going to continue. In the future, we're going to have an open forum where additional guests will come in to speak about what's on their mind. I've invited a few elected officials to stop by. Of course, they're all working on their year-end budgets, which have to be finalized in the next few weeks. After that, I'll ask them to come in, share their thoughts on many of the issues that we discussed today, and we'll be able to move forward. Until next Wednesday at 11 or Saturday at 11, I'll be back here for our Saturday variety program. I want to wish all of you the very best. Thanks for your participation. David Zenya, tomorrow Barbara will be back at 11 a.m. and on Friday as well. And I'll see you again here Saturday at 11 on 860 AM radio. David Zenya.